Well, they did it. The fishing duo of Patrick Walters and Geddes Brandon from the anglers at the University of South Carolina Bass Fishing Club beat out Liberty University and won the FLW College Bass Fishing Championship last Saturday on Lake Murray. Wow. I'll talk a little bit more about that the last weekend, but right now I'd like to welcome you to another Saturday on Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and you can listen to this show right there on your FM dial at 94.5. You can go to the Conservative Talk 94.5 website and click the Listen Live link on the right side of the page, or you can download the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app for your phone or tablet. You can also look at what Woods and Water has been up to at facebook.com/woodsandwatersc, and there are a lot of pictures up there from last weekend and the Bass Fishing Championships there. You can go to the website at woodsandwatersc.com to see more pictures and listen to the weekly podcast. That's right. If you miss a live Saturday show, like today, because you're outside fishing or hiking, you can go to the website, click on the podcast tab, and click on the show you missed or one you'd like to hear again. Last weekend, we were all kind of wondering where spring went because it was cold, it rained sideways at times, and the wind blew from 5 to 20 miles per hour last Thursday. Friday, we launched into a solid wall of fog. And it rained a little more, but not as hard, and the cloud stayed with us all day. Saturday dawned cloudy, but with a chance we might see the sun, and it did peak out around 11, till I came off the water around 2. Yes, I spent 3 days riding around Lake Murray watching only one team, the guys from the University of South Carolina. I got to say thanks to Julie and the crew at the FLW for putting on another great fishing tournament and for setting me up with a boat and driver each day. They get the Lake Murray Senior Bass Club members to run us around, and Friday I was with Dave. Hadn't ridden with him before, and as much as I hate to admit it, he was okay, even if he was from Ohio, and let me know how proud he was of the Buckeyes and their football championships. Friday and Saturday I was reunited with 80-mile-per-hour Marvin. I had him as a driver last year at the FLW Cup, and yes, we hit 80.2 miles an hour on Saturday. Marvin really does not like to be last or deal with all the wakes from the other boats. But back to the guys fishing. You know, they obviously had a game plan going into the tournament, and they stuck with it. They fished the same 15 or 20 spots all 3 days. Sometimes they caught fish and we stayed for half an hour. Other times we were moving 5 minutes after they stopped. If you bass fish much, then you know about the blueback herring spawn on some of our bigger lakes. I learned it takes a little bit of wind to get it started, and then the bass start biting. Thursday, it was one fish after another in the rain, and some of the spots we were fishing, schools of bass would start busting the top of the water chasing the herring, and it was fun to watch them furiously reel in a cast to somewhere else and lay it on top of those fish hoping to get a bite. Friday was a little bit slower because of the rain and cold temperatures from Thursday, and it slowed the bite down a little bit. However, they stayed with it and finished in second place Friday after the weigh-in, making the cut from the top 50 teams to the 10 teams that fish on championship Saturday. Saturday started out slow. Light winds meant the herring were scattered and the team had to change methods but stayed in the same water. Around 10 or so, the wind started picking up and the fish started biting again. They started upgrading the fish in the live well, but when I left the water, I knew it would be a close weigh-in, and it was. Like I said before, I put up a lot of pictures on the Facebook side. We'll get some on the website this weekend, so go check them out when you have a chance. I'll leave Saturday's weigh-in and all that happened on from their standpoint for Patrick and Geddes to tell you what that was like when they are here on the show next month. I know most of you out there are not diehard bass fishaholics. When you see what happened here in South Carolina over the last 9 months, you have at least got to be proud for our state and our champions. Anthony Gagliardi with his win at Lake Murray for the FLW Cup, Casey Ashley and his win on Lake Hartwell for the Bassmasters Classic, and now the team from USC and their FLW College Bass Fishing Championships, again on Lake Murray. To have three tournaments in the same year, have South Carolina natives, Anthony's from Prosperity, South Carolina, Casey Ashley's from Donald, South Carolina, Patrick Walters from Somerville, and Geddes Brandon from Gaffney, to have them win all three on their home lakes is something that will probably never happen again. I've been honored to be at all three wins, talk to and form friendships with all four of those guys, and appreciate what they've accomplished. And I hope you will, too. Like I said, Geddes and Patrick will be here. We're trying to work out our schedules. And it'll be something to hear from their standpoint. There was only one or two times the whole 3 days that they really let their emotions go. The rest of the time, they were focused on what they had to do, and they won. And that's what it takes. It takes consistency. So with that out of the way, we have a rather short calendar of events this week, but here's what we've got. The Friends of the NRA are having a banquet over in Woodruff. That's Woodruff, as we used to call it, FONRA, but that's Friends of the NRA. It's Saturday, May the 2nd. The location is the Woodruff Shine Club. They're in Woodruff, South Carolina, 201 Aiken Road. Starts at 5:30. Your contact is Jeremy Estes. His email, jeremy.estes@momentive.com. Like I said, on a lot of these, when you have the NRA, the National Wild Turkey Federation, Ducks Unlimited, you can actually just go to the NRA website on this one, click events in your state, come up with South Carolina, and you'll see a whole list of them. This is just the one that's happening next. From the South Carolina State Parks website, Sunrise Hike, Table Rock State Park. That's right there in Pickens, South Carolina. It says, be an early riser and take a unique moonlit hike up the end of Table Rock Mountain. After experiencing the nocturnal aspects of the forest, we'll enjoy the pre-dawn sky from the outcrop as we watch the sunrise. BYOT, that means bring your own thermos. There is no coffee shop at the top. So again, that's May the 3rd from 2:15 a.m. in the morning to 9:45 a.m. Registration deadline is the 28th. What to bring? Water, snack, good walking shoes, flashlight, and dress for the weather. Again, another one from the South Carolina State Parks website, Culinary Camp with Chef Laurie. This one they've had back in March. The next one's May the 5th through May the 7th. This is a weekend. It's held at Santee State Park. That's down in Santee, South Carolina. Gather around the stove, maybe a campfire, for Culinary Camp with Chef Laurie. This is no ordinary cooking class. Chef Laurie, who has cooked for a president at world-class spas and appeared on the Dr. Oz Show, will lead you through preparation, cooking, and eating a delicious and healthy meal during this two-night program. Great kitchen tips, simple, delicious, healthy meal plans. Healthy foods does not mean bland food. And Chef Laurie will show you how to spice up the doctor's orders to eat healthier. So, if you're into this, registration deadline is 1 week prior to the program, so that would be about February 28th. Let's see, what to bring, everything you'll need to be provided. The fee is $250 single, $175 double, and that includes your lodging. Ducks Unlimited. Again, you can go to ducks.org, find your event. This one's in Chester. This is the 2015 Chester sponsor event in Richburg, South Carolina, Thursday, May the 7th, 5:30 to 9 p.m. And that's at the Rocky Creek Sporting Clays facility there in Richburg, South Carolina. Speaking of Sporting Clays, boy, they had the Scholastic Sporting Clays tournament at the National Wild Turkey Federation last week, and I understand they had 400 kids shoot. Had a really good time. They gave away guns, laptop computers, tablets. So, I'm sorry, rabbit trail. Anyway, 2015 Chester sponsor event, Richburg, South Carolina, to benefit Ducks Unlimited, 5:30 to 9 p.m. Online ticket sales in May the 6th. And the last one. And this is a cause that I've gotten behind with Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, South Carolina chapter. These dates run May the 2nd, and you're going to have what it is. This is the Great Strides Walks. This is the walk to cure cystic fibrosis. May the 2nd in Charleston, in Florence, May the 2nd, Myrtle Beach, May 9th, Columbia, May 16th, and right here in Greenville on May the 16th. A worthy cause. I hope this year, if I can at all make it happen, to be able to fish in the Redbone Tournament down in Charleston to benefit cystic fibrosis. We'll have to see how that goes. I tried that last year. Just didn't have enough time. It started early enough. This year, I'm going to start it early enough. We'll see if we can do it. But that's the calendar for this week. I'll be adding that to the Facebook page. I have the event, date, location, website link for each event. But please, check those out a few days before you plan to go, just to make sure they haven't been changed for weather or other purposes. Here's the music. Come back on the other side. Continue on with our show. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. If you're listening to the show, this is a recorded show. This weekend, I'm happily chaperoning a high school senior trip. God, doesn't feel like I should be that old to have a graduating high school senior, but hey, time flies when you're having fun, right? And a lot of you out there listening know exactly what I'm talking about. With all that's been going on with the Bassmasters Classic, with the FLW College Bass Fishing Championships, I've kind of neglected turkey season, and I apologize for that. I'll be the first to admit I'm not a huge turkey hunter. I know a lot of people that are, and they all of them ask me, why don't you turkey hunt? I don't know. I have filled a couple of tags with turkeys, but it's just not, I don't know. Maybe it's the time of the year. You know, in my real life, I'm an accountant, and coming out of the April 15th deadline, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning is not something I want to do, although I just did it for 3 days. So I don't, maybe that's, who knows? But anyway, I've neglected turkey hunting, and I ran across this article by Steve Hickoff that is pretty good. And I've done these on, I think, duck hunting and maybe did a deer hunting one, but these are the 10 commandments of public land turkey hunting. And it starts off, some people have private honey holes, you know, fill in those tags. Just doesn't take much effort because there's no hunting pressure. And he goes, and then there's the rest of us, the guys who hunt public land turkeys with everyone else. It's busy. It's crowded. Some strategies are still in order, so let's get to them. Is number one, thou shalt chill on the locator call. You know, if you've never turkey hunted, you go in with a crow call or an owl hooter, and you go in there and start blowing those things, and it pulls a gobble from a turkey that's on the roost or maybe down on the ground already. But it says some hunters go too far. And you've heard that guy before, the jacked-up hunter hustling along the next ridge, making like a caffeine-crazed barred owl or crow in an attempt to pull shot gobbles from male turkeys, or worse, sound like a wailing Bigfoot covering ground. Yep, he's getting noticed all right, but birds don't like what they see or hear. Locator calls work, sure, but use them sparingly. His tip? Let real owls and crows locate birds for you. Stop. Listen. Hunt that shot gobbling turkey. And I know I'm guilty of that. Although I do hunt some private land, I like to get out there, and if he doesn't answer, I just blow it even harder. Which is probably I'm not a very good turkey hunter. Number two, thou shalt not covet another guy's gobbler. Yep, sometimes it's hard to tell if another hunter is working a bird, especially in a big wood situation, if the other guy's a good yelper. But if you can tell someone is calling to a hot turkey, don't try to cut the gobbler off by getting between the hunter and his bird. It's poor sportsmanship and might even earn you a fist fight or worse. You don't like it when another guy slips in on you, right? Well, then, do it unto him as you'd have done unto you. His tip, walk away, find another bird, or come back later and try that turkey again. Number three, thou shalt not hunt posted property. Got no trespassing posters surrounding your public land spot? Hear birds on the other side of the line? Don't be a public land gobbler. Require tempted. Don't break the law. Thou shalt not steal. Stay put. Extra attention to detail. Try to call a gobbler to you. It may be private land where he stands, but where you sit is public access. Once the bird crosses that line, he's sure to take. They're everybody's turkeys, but where they stand strutting legally matters. Hunt by the rules of the game. His tip, slip into an unpressured public area, call softly, and yelp that hung-up tom to your side. And that brings up a good point. You know, turkeys really don't like to cross fences or creeks. I was talking to a friend of mine who was turkey hunting, and last Saturday morning he said, you know, we had the gobbler in the tree. He flew down towards us. We could hear some hens with him, but he just wouldn't come to us. And I said, do you have a fence or a creek between you? Which is my one glowing nugget of turkey hunting knowledge here, is that they don't like to cross creeks. And sure enough, there was a creek there. I said, you know, I said, everything I've heard is that if a turkey is on the other side of the creek and he's got a hen with him, he's not coming to you. So you need to get on the other side of the creek with him. Number four, thou shalt not belly crawl. Use these tactics on private land? Sure, within reason. They sometimes work. Repositioning on hung up spring strutters by slithering like a snake can sometimes put you in the comfort zone. Speaking of snakes, they're out there. Be careful. Few people have been putting up pictures of copperheads and water moccasins who are out while they're turkey hunting, so that might, you know, getting down on their level might not be the best thing to do. But he goes on, so does putting a full turkey fan in front of you and moving on birds, gun or bow ready for when the territorial strutter rushes to your position ready to fight. But what if another hunter sees your fan tail coming to his hidden setup position? On public land, it can be downright dangerous. And we all hear the stories. We all see the newspaper articles, so just be careful. Tip, getting down and dirty works, but timed right, aggressively calling turkeys to you does too. Number 5, thou shalt not dress like a turkey head. This is an obvious safety measure we've been taught since our youth hunting days, right? Nope, not always. Every season on public land, I'll see guys wearing gobbler-faced red t-shirts poking out above camo, white sock patches creeping out underneath pant cuffs, blue jeans too, plus black shotguns the color of a gobbler's body. In a hunting situation where patches of color might be seen as you hear gobbling and move toward it and anticipate seeing birds, this is bad news. It's just plain dumb otherwise and pretty much unsafe on hard-hit public lands. Being concealed is a tactical advantage to gaining the edge on turkeys, and it's one that can keep you safe to boot. Identify your target, first rule of gun safety. Don't shoot at color, but don't wear unsafe apparel either. Camouflage is your solution. Tip, point this tip out to young hunters you're bringing along as you talk safety issues with them. Number 6, thou shalt not be lazy. Public land gets some steady pressure. Turkeys, watching and listening to you guys approach their roost positions, figure the deal out fast. They may not know what hunters hustling towards them might be, but they don't like it. They stay on the roost, gobbling like ringtone recordings. They wing off branches, hit the ground, and walk or run the other way. Haven't seen this? Then you don't hunt enough public land. I've seen it on private land. I canoe across a lake, pull the canoe up on the bank, look up in the oak tree above me, and there's a dozen turkeys staring at me. You know, busted. So they know what's going on. Hatch a plan B strategy. Get permission on an adjacent property. Private land sitting next to public access. Call the bird to you there. Or just wait for the gobbler to show up after the other guys run him off. His tip, mix it up. Choose different angles to approach roosted birds before setting up to call. Gobbler gear. Public land turkey hunters often cover a lot of ground and deal with some of the sharpest birds in the woods. Here's some gear choices to tip the odds in your favor. Vestless shirt, and he goes on, a Browning ground blind. They got a Field and Stream vest here, and I tell you, you can outfit a turkey hunter almost as much as you can a duck hunter. Decoys, calls, camouflage, shotguns, it's amazing how similar they are. Number 7, thou shalt not keep a bird gobbling. Did a turkey answer your call? Then shut up. He knows where you are, likely to the exact tree. If you keep calling just to hear the bird respond, pumped up by the interaction, you risk calling something else to other hunters. Or, if you kept up with it over the last few years, you've heard the stories and seen pictures of people who've had bobcats stalk up on them, coyotes stalk up on them, so you become actually a target to another predator. His tip, a gobble is intoxicating, sure enough, but give it a rest when a tom's hammering at you. Like I said, he probably already knows where you are. Number 8, thou shalt not be dumb with gobbler decoys. There's no doubt about it. We're in the golden age of turkey decoys. They've never been better. Hen decoys look so realistic, many a live gobbler tries to breed with them each season around turkey country. Gobbler fakes, from scrawny jakes with cigar stub beards to full fan strutters, are widely available and fool the best of eyes. In a controlled private situation or big public land spot with lots of room, they draw in birds. But use care if staking them in a highly pressurized public spot with lots of hunters, though. You'll chance at pulling other guys to you, spooking any nearby birds, and messing with your hunt. Worse yet, somebody may think they see a puffed-up long beard standing there. Not good. His tip, pinch a pop-up blind near your turkey fakes. It can let hunters know those birds are phony. Number 9, thou shalt not give up. And this being late into April is when a lot of people give up. Me, I've been once, forgot my calls. I gave up a long time ago. Just not going to happen. Public land gobblers hear a lot of calling. Lots of it comes right before fly down until around mid-morning. Hang around. The best is yet to come sometimes. Take a little nap. Let things settle down. As the morning grows late, call softly. Unlike the calling racket you and the turkeys have been hearing, you might even pull in a silent gobbler looking for a sweet-talking hen. His tip, stay comfortable out there as you hold your ground. Chairs and seat cushions can help. And number 10, thou shalt not tell all. Nah, I'm not telling you to lie in the true sense, just fib. Every veteran turkey hunter knows this secret, especially when hunting public land. Hear any birds, spurts the newbie? Nope, how about you, bud, replies the veteran. You can pick out a rookie every time. They gush about the turkeys they heard on the roost and the big hung-up strutter they saw and where it went. They can't tell you enough about it. Fib again. Now keep this information for the next time. Even for the late season when everybody else is bass fishing, the public land birds might still be there. His tip, sometimes keep your mouth shut. Just nodding and smiling is the best response of all. Like I said, I'm not much of a turkey hunter. Maybe I'll change that. I have some friends who keep saying they're going to take me out and get me invigorated and teach me what it's all about, and I'll be a dedicated turkey hunter going forward, but so far hasn't happened. But talking about the fibbing and all that, and you can tell that if you've hunted any at all, duck hunting, you know, it applies to fishing too. Hiking, you got a special spot and somebody just blurts it all out, or a favorite fishing hole, and it gets out and pretty much everybody's sitting there the next time you get in there. I have a good friend who's got a couple of sons that we hunt with, and I was with two of the boys the other day at a high school ball, and we were talking, and one of them said, yeah, he's already killed his turkey and going back after another. And I knew exactly. I said, well, I didn't even ask him where he killed it. I said, killed it Eastern United States, right? He said, yeah, Southern Eastern United States. They're that whole, their spot's that close to them. And it's funny when you run across a veteran who just will not tell you where anything happens. So anyway, for you turkey hunters out there, hope you've had a good season. I hope it's been a safe season. I've got a friend leaving out of here. In fact, he's a sponsor of this show, Ben with Outdoor Underwriters. He's headed out. I think he's going after a Merriam's. Evidently, there's more than just the Eastern Wild Turkey. But he's going to try to get his slam. I think the Merriam's is the last one. I think it's at Montana he's going to. Be nice to travel if you enjoy turkey hunting that much. So anyway, here's my 2 cents on turkeys. Hope you enjoyed it. Hang on through the music. We'll be back on the other side.
Conservative Talk, 94.5.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We are thrilled to have Beth LeMaster from the U.S. Forest Service on the phone with us. Beth, how are you this morning?
I am great, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, I've as everybody who listens to this show, one of the taglines is take the back roads when you can, and I do that as often as I can. And I was coming back and forth to Columbia, and you have the big sign there at the Energy Ranger Station saying open house May the 2nd. I said, I've got to get them on to talk about that. So go ahead. Tell us what's going on with the open house there at the NRE Ranger Station.
Well, our open house is scheduled for May 2nd and from 11 o'clock to 2:30. We've actually were two different offices for many, many years, and we've just physically combined the NRE and the Tiger offices into one. And we did that to really better serve the public. Instead of having to go to two places to get information, it's one-stop shopping, and they were only 18 miles apart to begin with.
Okay.
So we want to celebrate our new office and let people know about their national forest.
Their national forest is right, and we're talking about Sumter National Forest?
That is correct. The Sumter National Forest and the Entry District, which is primarily a Piedmont district on the Sumter.
Okay. What is now? You work for the Forest Service. What is their mission here in South Carolina with Sumter National Forest?
Well, the mission of the Forest Service our roots are in agriculture. We're under the United States Department of Agriculture, and our sister agency under the Department of Interior is the Park Service. But we are USDA, and so our mission is to sustain healthy, diverse, and productive national forests and grasslands that not only meet the needs of the present generation, but also future generations. So in a nutshell, what's simple to remember is that we care for the land and we serve the people.
Absolutely outstanding mission here, because one of the emphases of this show is to get people back outdoors. And not many people know, or I guess they know, but they don't know how to access the over 170,000 acres that is Sumpter National Forest.
Right, and it's a lot of people don't even know that South Carolina has a national forest. It is, we actually have two national forests. We have the Francis Marion, which is on the coast, and then up in the upstate we have the Sumpter, which is, I guess it's about 360,000 acres total. And of that, about 170,000 is on this district. We have two Piedmont districts, the Long Cane and the Ennery, and then we have a Foothill Mountain district, the Andrew Pickens, up in the Walhalla area.
Okay. Well, May the 2nd, when people want to come there, first of all, I guess, how do they get there? You're how many miles below Whitmire 176 are you?
We're about... 5 miles from Whitmire, and we're 121 crosses the interstate, so
right.
So at I-26 we're about 6.5 miles north toward Whitmire from that, so it's real easy to find, great easy access, and it's on the right hand side of the road. You can't miss it, but it's off, right off of 121 and 176. They're one and the same at that point, those roads are. So we're right off that, not too far from the interstate, right before you get to Whitmire.
And if people want to know where Whitmire is, that's on the eastern side of I-26.
That's correct.
That's
between Newberry and Union. That's where we are. It's kind of not a real populated area, but a lot of trees, but it's pretty, you know. And we hope it's a great day. We're going to start the ceremony and the ribbon cutting and everything at 11 o'clock, and we will have a small lunch for folks that are here, probably hot dogs, and then some activities for kids. You know, one passion of mine is getting more kids out in the woods.
So, there you go.
So basically, you take them out there, they'll love it. I mean, it's just so many neat things to find and do, and so we're going to have activities. It's also, you know, we just celebrated Earth Day, so
right.
Some activities to make some bracelets and learn about the different parts of the environment and the bracelet making, and some mobile fish mobiles to learn about some animals. And we're also going to have some equipment we use in our firefighting displayed, so kids can crawl around on a engine and a dozer. And of course, we'll have our honored guest would be Smokey Bear. We'll make his appearance, and you can get pictures there. And then we'll have some equipment that we use every day with forestry, working on getting a portable sawmill there, and some equipment that you would see for managing our forest. So a lot of different things, and a lot of hands-on fun stuff, and also learning opportunities for both parents and kids.
Great. I assume when you have all the equipment there, you'll have people that drive a bulldozer to tell kids, hey, this is how you operate it and stuff. So when you have those exhibits, there'll be people there, of course, that know exactly how to use those, and the hands-on and the learning and all that. It's not like you're bringing in just moms and dads. There will be people that know what they're talking about.
Right. We're going to have everything staffed with you know, people who run them every day, so they'll be able to answer questions why we do things and how we do things.
Sumpter National Forest, we've talked about how large it is. Your district lies where? I grew up in Chester, South Carolina, on the other side of the river from you. You know, back in the 60s, we didn't have deer, and then they introduced them, and they kind of sprung from Sumpter National Forest. But the heart of Sumpter National Forest lies pretty much right there along the Broad River, doesn't it?
Right. It's between the Broad River, and it butts up against I-26 in some areas. So it's really... In a unique area where it's near some big cities, Greenville, Charlotte, Columbia, kind of right out in the middle, not too far from 85 and 26. It's actually in five different counties. Most of the acreage is in Newberry and Union County. So if you look where they come together in Lawrence, you'll be in the heart the Ennery District. So it's Newberry, Union, Lawrence, a little bit of Chester, and Fairfield counties. So five counties are included in the Ennery District.
Now, I lose a little bit of cell coverage. Do you know from, I know from a lot of people who are not used to being out of cell coverage, do we have cell coverage in most of the areas you drive in Sumter National Forest, or are there spots where you're going to lose it?
There are definitely spots when you lose it. However, if you drive or even, you know, walk to the next ridge, you know, you'll pick it up. So there are, especially along the rivers, which are a little lower in elevation, you'll lose cell phone coverage. But it doesn't take, you know, within a mile, you pick it back up again.
We've got all this land out there. Some people may know about it, some people don't. What are some of the activities people can take advantage of in the Sumter National Forest?
Oh, there's so many of them. I personally enjoy being outside, so I love hiking, and I love horseback riding. I like to hunt and fish, and all those activities are available. I would say our primary use of the forest is probably hunting and fishing as far as the number of people.
Okay.
The whole forest is, we have an agreement with the state of South Carolina that it's in their wildlife management program. So it's WMA land, so it's public land, and it is open to hunting and fishing. In fact, we have the longest partnership in the United States with a state agency. And not every national forest operates that way. But so we do get a lot of interest in hunting and fishing, and we follow those seasons. And then we also get a lot of interest in hiking and horseback riding. We have the Ennery Passage of the Palmetto Trail, and that's a pretty cool trail. It goes from the sea to the mountains, or mountains to the sea, and we're part of that passage of the Palmetto Trail. We've got about 35 miles here. As part of that trail, there's a lot of smaller little trails up to little areas, but we also have some interest in canoeing. We have the Ennery River, about 40 miles of trail there, Tiger River, about 30 miles, and then we connect into the Broad River, so there's some canoe trails there as well, about 24 miles. And another popular item is a lot of people like to ride their dirt bikes and four-wheelers, and they don't have a place to take them. So we do have 23 miles of interconnected loops, our OHV trail, and it's $5 a day, which is, you know, pretty cheap. You can drive all day and on those trails. And we do close it when it's really wet weather, just to minimize resource damage, but
sure.
We have a number that you call before you haul.
Call before you haul. And I noticed
that's
on
correct.
on the website, if you go to your website, on the right hand side, you post actually the trail closings and information that people might need to know before they go out.
Right. We hate for somebody to pack up and get there and it be closed. So that is updated when we make a status change, and as soon as it dries out enough, we will open it back up. But yeah, check that and call the number there to make sure.
Well, look, we're fixing to run up against a break here. I appreciate all this information. Do you have time to hold over to the other side and cover a few more things with me?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Well, good. Well, like I said, we're talking with Beth LeMaster from the U.S. Forest Service underneath the USDA. We're talking about the open house on May the 2nd at the Ennery Ranger District off Highway 176. Going through some of the things you can do in the Sumter National Forest. When we come back, I'm sure we got a few more things to cover up. So bear with us. Hang in there till after the music and the commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. And we're back on Woods and Water, South Carolina, and we're still talking with Beth LeMaster from the U.S. Forest Service. Beth, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
You're still there. You know, like I said, growing up in Chester, spent a good bit of time. I learned to duck hunt. Actually, me shooting a bunch of wood ducks up along Broad River below Lockhart. I fished the Broad River for smallmouths. We used to, back years ago when the Wildlife Department had a dove field down at Worthy Bottoms, hunted that, and I understand, and y'all have brought that field back. The Forest Service is in control of that dove field now.
That's correct. We do a lot of joint wildlife work together, but just depending on who has the manpower at the time, we're managing primarily that Worthy Bottom field, and it's been a good field over the years. Great youth hunts on that early part of the season.
I'm trying to think. The first time I hunted Worthy Bottoms, I was probably 10 or 11 years old, 30-something years ago now. It's a long, long time ago, but great memories of growing up.
Are you a better shot now?
I sure hope so.
Okay.
And we talked a little bit about horseback riding, the access to the Broad River and the Tiger and the NRE. Rifle ranges. You've got how many rifle ranges in the Sumter National Forest?
We are loaded with rifle ranges for a district this size. We actually have four. We have one in Lawrence County, Newberry County, Union County, and Chester County. And they get quite a bit of use, especially the one here in Newberry County. It's so close to I-26.
Right.
And there's no fee to use them. I mean, there's still a few free things left in this world, and that's one of them. One thing that we do ask is that people just clean up what they mess up, and that's helping us be able to keep them open. I mean, keeping them clean. But yeah, they do get a lot of use, and you can mainly sight in your rifle or shotgun. We don't allow skeet. Shooting or anything like that, but they are pretty nice rifle ranges.
But you will see some broken clay targets, because there's nothing like taking a kid out there with a .22 and letting him pound a clay target, because they just shatter.
See them. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And folks, when you go out to these rifle ranges, remember, watch where your muzzle is. You know, there's usually somebody there is kind of taking charge about, you know, keeping guns downrange when you hang targets. But always remember, as soon as you get out of the car, put your earmuffs on. And when you hit the range, put your safety glasses on. Two very good things to know about going there. And are there any historical areas or points of interest if people are the type that like to go to the historical markers and are things that are pertinent to South Carolina history? Are there any places like that in the Sumter National Forest?
Well, we do, and the first one that comes to mind is the our Molly's Rock little picnic recreation area. And actually, some of the original stuff there was built by the CCCs many years ago. And there's some historical markers and just the history of the Molly's Rock area itself. We actually have some sites that are prehistoric Indians at sites that that we found a lot of arrowheads and different things from. You know, we don't allow anybody digging or keeping or trying to find artifacts, but there's some at least signage that you can learn about the area. We do have an archaeologist on staff who is a wealth of information. His name is Mike Harmon, and if anybody's interested in any of the history or what they can see, I would suggest calling in and talking to him.
Now, you have maps available, correct?
That's correct.
And they would get those from the NRE station. Can they get those online, or do you have to go there in person?
Well, we're working on that.
Okay.
These maps are a little bit dated. We're supposed to be updating and getting new maps 2015, so this year. But you can come in and purchase a map for $6. And there's some maps you can actually print off, just not the same detail, but off the website has quite a bit of information on the trails and that. So that should be, I would look there first.
Okay. Well, there's lots going on out there. I know a few weeks ago I was headed to Columbia in the daytime, went down. I think I had to fly, so I was on I-26. Coming back, I was at night. Topped a hill there, probably 10 miles where you get the ranger station on 176, and there's fire all out through the woods. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, no, you know, we've got a runaway. But it turns out that was a 1,900-acre control burn you did. And I know social media here in Greenville was lit up. Last week, I believe it was, people talking about the smoke in the air and all that. that's all part of what y'all do, and that's called controlled burning. Can you tell us a little bit about what a controlled burn, what it does?
Well, and we do actively manage the forest, so we try to minimize the risk for wildfires. We do work to improve wildlife habitat and just for ecological restoration, because fire, if you look at the history, fire was a big part of the ecosystem here.
Yes.
And so we try to mimic that, and we try to burn about 15,000 acres a year, which on a district this size, it probably should be more, but that's really what our capacity is.
Okay.
And so, you know, that burn that weekend was closer to 2,700 acres.
Okay.
And that's, you know, we usually don't go over about 3,000 at a time, but we work with the Forestry Commission, and there's so much smoke that you can put in the air,
right,
at a time, and they limit the tonnage of what you burn. So we coordinate through that. So it is controlled. We have a lot of people on it, and on the line itself, we do burn to help the forest, to help the wildlife, and to get some of the green, young, good vegetation coming back in.
Yeah, I have a good friend of mine who moved to California and married a girl from California. And one of the first pictures she saw of Morris and I together is we were burning a trash pile at the farm. And she was like, oh, you can't burn, you know. And that's that California state of mind that fire is bad. But actually, fire is great because I'm going to prove this because I took some pictures the next day of the burn, as you know, you had some stumps smoldering, maybe a little bit of live fire, and then I got some pictures the other day of it, you know, a few months afterwards. I'm going to take some through the summer, the fall, the winter, next spring, and I'm going to put those up as a collage on the website and the Facebook page to let people see just how beneficial a fire is to a standing forest,
and how green it gets afterwards.
Oh,
I mean, it's amazing, and the wildlife that you see right back in there again.
That's exactly right. The deer, the rabbits, you know, everything.
Turkeys, yeah.
Everything that it loves, that fresh new foliage to eat. Well, Beth, I really appreciate you working me in this morning. Okay, once again, it's May 2nd. From what time to what time?
It's 11 o'clock to 2:30. You can drop in anytime during that time, but we'd love to see you guys there. May 2nd, 11 to 2:30.
I appreciate it. Have a nice afternoon, and I will try, if all possible, to be there at least for the first hour or so before I have to come back here for the show.
All right. Sounds super. We look forward to seeing you guys.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, folks, if you're looking for a place to go, you don't have land of your own, you've got over 170,000 acres in the Sumpter National Forest. It may seem, wow, where do I start in 170,000 acres? Go to the ranger station this next weekend. Learn about it. Pick up a map. I mean, just go and do it. And I mean, seriously, Department of Natural Resources stocks the Broad River with smallmouths. And the smallmouths, the hotter the weather, the better they bite. It's a good place to go smallmouth. I've camped along the river. Like I said, Worthy Bottoms Dove Field. I've been to the rifle ranges down there. They're all really good. They're handicap accessible. I know at least two of them have a handicap table. So if you're confined to a wheelchair, you can still go and shoot. You don't have to be a hunter to use those. If you have a pistol, you just want to get out on a good Saturday morning and go shoot some, they will let you put up targets at 25 yards. Just be aware of everybody else around you shooting. Take your kids out with the 22s, go hiking, horseback riding. If you've got a four-wheeler, you got places you can go. Just a great place right here in our state. Doesn't cost you anything to use it. Maybe a little bit for the, I think she said, with four-wheelers and the map. So maybe $10 to get out and enjoy it for a day. Hope you'll take advantage of it. Hope you enjoyed that segment with her. I did. Growing up close to it, it's just nice to see how it evolved over the years. Let's see, a few little things for wrap up. Department of Natural Resources has out their waterfowl harvest summary in case you're duck hunted last year and want to put in for the draw hunts for the next year. The same places were really good: Bear Island, East, West, Springfield the Cut. You know, those guys average 4.3 ducks per hunter. Sandy Beach, 4.6. And then you get into some threes and all that. So go to the Department of Natural Resources website. look for the waterfowl harvest summaries. It's a good planning tool for next year if you want to put in for a duck hunt here in the state. And then a story that came off, and we talked about this earlier, about ducks, legislative wins for ducks and duck hunting. You know, first we had the duck stamp bills officially in the books, signed into law. It raised the price from $15 to $25. You know, we don't like to pay any more, but, you know, here you know exactly where that money is going. Even better news, you can now get your federal duck stamp online. I know the last few years it's been kind of a toss-up whether the post service is going to have them or if you have to go to Walmart and you get somebody that doesn't know what a duck stamp is. Now you can go online and get it, which is great. Access, making it easier for us to get outside and enjoy our resources is what they're all about. So, Chuck Norris for this week. And for those of you suffering with springtime allergies, Chuck Norris can sneeze with his eyes open. I had to try that. Summer camps. You know, Camp Wildwood is probably full. You still got the Clemson Youth Learning Institute camps that have lots of camps all summer long. You know, they have the shooting sports, tech camp, mountain adventure, coastal camp, and then the traditional 4-H camp where you turn the canoe over and figure out you can breathe in an air bubble while on the water. Get your kids in a summer camp. Outdoors is a hands-on sport. Just deal with it. There's James in the background, so that's all for this week. Make those plans. Be prepared and be careful while you're out there. As always, take the back roads. Don't forget the camera. I'll talk to you next Saturday.
From behind, 'cause I'm gone to Carolina.